Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Washington Speaks African American Family Room Forum on this Saturday evening, March the 9th, 2019, as we head into the beginning of the spring season. Hopefully your weather will improve as the weeks go by. We've had some terrible news of bad weather situations throughout the country during the last several months, going all the way back into the latter part of last year, and even in the summer with the hurricanes buffeting and blasting and actually destroying many communities, and now the recent ice storms and bad snow conditions, blocking highways, keeping people from being able to return home that went out on trips to visit loved ones or to travel for pleasure, being stuck in roadways and even on the highways. And of course, the recent tragic tornadoes in Alabama that killed dozens of people. So we hope that the springtime will bring a renewal of hope and relief from these tragic situations. But we're glad that you've joined us tonight, and we certainly want to welcome our veteran panelist, Mr. Pianchi. You're the first and only one of our regular panelists to join us, and we're hoping that we have others. But how are you doing this evening, sir?
I'm doing fine, yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing just fine. It's been a good, restful day for me. Saturday is my rest day. I don't know if I can properly call it a Sabbath, because Sabbath in the old traditional sense meant a day from working for material benefits and spending time in spiritual reflection and services of a religious spiritual nature in some communities like the Seventh-day Adventists, but I just rest. I do my normal spiritual reflection, but nothing special. I don't usually even leave the house, just rest. It's been a good day. But anyway, our topic for tonight is, what is your opinion of school districts downsizing needed student services such as school nurses and school counselors in order to pay for putting more police in the public schools? And before we get into the actual discussion, I just want to give our audience some background. A report that was written by a writer by the name of Cheyenne Hazlett on March the 5th speaks about that topic, and I just want to, without going into the whole report, of course, that might take up too much time, I just want to give some of the highlights to set the tone for our talk tonight. And so, according to the writer, about 14 million students attend schools across the United States where they walk the halls alongside police officers but don't have access to counselors, nurses, psychologists, or social workers. According to an ACLU report, American Civil Liberties Union report released on Monday, and the schools and other schools that do provide students access to mental health professionals, about 90% fail to meet minimum staff to student ratio, which report found can mean one counselor for more than 400 students. But the increasingly popular decision to fund police officers in schools, combined with a lack of mental health experts available, has had a disproportionate effect on both students of color and students with disabilities, the report found. And nationwide, these marginalized students, meaning students of color and students with disabilities, were subject to more discipline bias and over-criminalization than their peers, meaning their white peers. According to a review of 2015 to 2016 data from the Department of Education. And we're going to skip now to another part of the report where it says that an overabundance of black girls have been criminalized since this data was collected. It says black girls, about 13% of female students, counted for nearly 40% of the girls arrested in schools and were arrested at least four times more often than white girls. And Latino and Latina students were arrested in schools at a rate of 1.3 times higher than white students. And Native American and Pacific Islander students were more likely, probably were more than twice as likely to be arrested as white students nationwide. And then it connects this high criminalization rate with the mental health issue, and it says that meanwhile, mental health professionals are often the first to see children who are sick, stressed, or traumatized, especially in low-income districts, the report found. Having mental health professionals at schools leads to better attendance rates, academic achievement, and graduation rates, while bringing down the rates of suspensions, expulsions, and other disciplinary incidents. And finally, we'll just say that the Obama administration had sought to call attention to the problem of diverting money away from mental health support, and also it doesn't go in a lot of detail about nursing, student nursing, but this was part of the study, the report. But the current Secretary of Education under the Trump administration, Spencer DuVos, actually rescinded the Obama administration's instructions. And you may agree with this, Mr. Bianchi, not to single you out, but her position is that the federal government did not need to get involved in the policies of these school districts that decided to pull back money for mental health and nursing support in order to put more police in the schools. Her position is that that's not a federal Department of Education concern. It should not be a federal government intervention. It should be left up to the school districts. So that sets up the stage for me to bring you back on, sir. And so what is your opinion about this pulling back money for mental health professionals, school counselors, and also nurses in order to put more police in the hallways and even in the classrooms?
Well, public schools not supposed to provide no outlet for mental health. How in the heck did that go over? Where's the medical facilities for that? Unless the people in their school district want that. But I wouldn't want to be associated with that in a school. How did that work out? I don't understand it. And, of course, the crime that's written in these communities, I guess the people want to have police officers in it. I think that you should just have better security, a better plan, and have some of the teachers armed. But the school districts do what they want to do. Many of your public school districts are hemorrhaging population for a whole host of reasons. That's why I'm strongly for school choice. Parents can put their child where they feel best for them, and the money follows the child. So I don't know what to say about that. I can't see a public school supposed to be dealing with students with mental health. What part of the school does that?
Okay. We just had Stephanie, my sister, my dear beloved sister-in-law, join us. We're going to bring you on in just a minute, Stephanie, but I do want to repeat the topic in case you didn't hear it, in case we have some that joined us since we repeated a few minutes ago. Our topic for tonight is, what is your opinion of school districts downsizing needed student services such as school nurses and school counselors in order to pay for putting more police in the public schools? And just before you came on, we had read some of the report. It came out earlier this month, and I'm not going to read it again, but it basically said that black girls tend to be arrested by school police three times more than their actual ratio in the schools would reflect, and that there's a great need, according to this report, for mental health professionals, even to the extent of helping reduce teenage suicides by school students. And then it doesn't get into a lot of detail about school nurses. They basically are focusing on behavioral issues that the school counselors, mental health professionals are trained to help the students deal with. And of course, what they're saying is by taking these people out of the schools and putting police in the schools, and according to this report, which I didn't mention before, the additional police does not seem to be causing a decrease in criminal incidents in the schools. Even though they're policing the halls, the young people are still doing criminal activities, whether they're bullying or pushing or beating up kids or stealing from kids or whatever. There's still the same rate of that happening regardless of the extra police. So I wanted just to go ahead and kind of lay that out for you, Stephanie, and thank you for joining us tonight. And congratulations. I won't put your business out on the internet, but congratulations, and you know exactly what I'm referring to. So what's your response to the question?
Well, thank you. My personal response is that as far as counselors, I think counselors' main job in a school should be the child's curriculum, guiding them into the right studies for them and things, not dealing with violence. And now, I don't think violent kids should be in the public schools, and I don't think the police should either. They need to beef up security if they need it, you know, to watch the halls and classrooms. But they have schools that they take these children out of public schools and they put them in these continuation schools, and that's where they should be. And then the ones that are mentally retarded or whatever need to be in those type of schools. But the continuation schools is probably where the police should be for bullies and for kids that are not there to learn. They're distracting other children to a horrible degree. So in public school, they just need to weed all of that out, you know, so public school can be more like it was when we were coming up. We didn't have to deal with all that. And then these continuation schools, that's where the police should be. If they got to have police in the schools, that's where they're needed, where the violence and stuff is. Don't just mix all that stuff in together in the public schools and take away from the nurses and counselors and piles a whole bunch of stuff up on their plate. You know, more parents should get involved anyway. That's the main thing. And come up there and see how their kids is acting. You know, when I had teenagers in my home, I would go up there to the school, see what's going on, get involved a little bit. You know, these parents are not doing that. And so they're part of the problem too. So, no, I don't think we need a bunch of police in the school like that. I'm sorry. Let me see. I'm in somebody's way. I am good in you. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. So, are you doing that? Oh, you still there, Stephanie?
I'm sorry. What? You know, I'm still at this hotel, even though we got the house.
Oh. Okay. Okay. You still want to?
Yeah.
Would you want to continue?
Well, no, I think basically that's how I feel.
Okay.
I volunteered. I've volunteered in a lot of schools, you know, as a reading tutor. And I didn't even have children in the school just to help out, just to give something back to society. And parents need to do that, and, you know. Even if they have to open up a day on Saturday or something, come up there. Especially those with problem children, but they need to separate them, put them in a different type of school, a continuation school where they're cutting up like that. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, this is just the three of us right now, and everyone has expressed his or her opinion. And so unless we get some more participants, we'll probably stop a little early tonight because we don't need to go over the same ground over and over again once we have expressed our opinion, unless there's some new thoughts and new information. But I do want to add something before we wrap up, if we wrap up early, and that's this. that the school system, the public school system, for many, many decades has been an extension of the family life. There's a principle in education, a legal principle, which is called in loco parentis. And what it means is in place of the parents. And the concept of in loco parentis is that the parents basically give some of their right to govern the behavior, the life, or even the schedule of the children to the school system to do their work of molding the children to be good citizens and to become, quote unquote, key citizens. And so the idea is that there's a lot of things that the children need from the parents and from the society, including emotional support, that the professionals are in a better position via their training to give. And that's why it was set up for the children to be able to get that mental health support at school rather than to go outside of the in loco parentis situation, although that is available to go into the social services system. Child support for emotional problems, disturbance. The child has a crying jag in the classroom because of a teenage love relationship issue, and the teacher says you need to go see the counselor. The counselor is supposed to be trained to help that child find some balance so that child can go back to the classroom and study more effectively. So all of these different things that the counselors do, in addition to teaching the children about opportunities for educational advancement, do help these children. The police situation may be needed in some areas, even in some of the upper-scale white schools, because there's a lot going on in some of these white communities where these young teenage white kids have become homicidal. Personally, myself, I have to say that I believe that they should not take the counselors out of the schools, and I don't think they should definitely take the nurses out of the schools. I'm not really excited about the idea of police being, you know, all over the schools. I wouldn't want to go to a school like that, but maybe today that's what we have to expect. So we're going to just do this. I made a promise that we wouldn't prolong the discussion if we didn't have any more participants. We'll allow those who are with us, that's just basically you, Mr. Piazza and Stephanie, to go around one more time if you want to add something. If not, we can wrap up. I don't see anybody else to show up while I was talking. So, Mr. Piazza, have you got any additional comments you would like to make on the topic?
No, that's about it. But I want to add something from, I think, talking about those kids showing up at the border. You had a conversation on that, if you don't mind.
Did you want to add some more opinion about what was going on down there? Or did you want to comment on something that
I was going to add something on the border. You know, people talking about separation of kids. Well, you have thousands of cases of kids not only showing up at the border by themselves, but showing up with adults that's not even related to them. And then you got another thing that's going on. These kids have not been immunized in their country. And they're coming to the United States and with the possibility, if not already, transmitting diseases, especially when they're put into classrooms or the public schools. You know, you got to educate them, even if they aren't non-citizens. They pass these things on to American children. Now, if they don't trust the government, think about it. If they don't trust the government to the point where they're leaving, you think they're going to let the government immunize their kids, stick them in the arm with a needle, and they don't know what's going in their veins? It's got to be some truth to that. So I just wanted to put that out there since you had a discussion on that a couple of weeks ago. And, of course, I'm adamant against letting people into the country illegally. And, you know, here's another thing. If you're going to seek refugee status in another country, you do it in your country. Go to the U.S. Embassy, fill out the paperwork, then you wait for the process to begin. You don't go to another country, go in it, then while you're in it, you ask for refugee status. That's not the way it's done. And asking for refugee status because your country is poor is not a reason to be allowed into another country. Of course, unless they want to take you in. I don't think the United States should be doing that. But on your other topic, you talk about the nurses. Some of those nurses make over $100,000 a year. And I don't know what the ramification is. I know in Philadelphia school district where they post the salaries of employees online, their name and what profession that they're in, you can find where some of those nurses are making a lot of money. So maybe a school district can't afford it. They're hemorrhaging students. Every place you look, you got schools closing. St. Louis closed 38, Chicago closed 50. Why? There's no students. So why are you going to keep those buildings open? If a building was built to hold 1,200 students and you only got 200 in there, something's wrong. The building's being ran inefficiently. And those old buildings were not built for zone heating and cooling. So you got to heat the whole building up. It's a waste of energy. Think about it. Anyway, that's my contribution.
Okay, we'll go back to 2060. Want to make a comment as we wrap up. Just give me a second, Stephanie. Go ahead. So did you want to make a comment before we wrap up?
Yes, I would also like to say something about the immigration thing. I do believe that they come over here and haven't been immunized. But at the same time, here in the United States, parents are refusing to immunize their children, too. And I think that's horrible. You know, children are dying every day. They come up with these childhood diseases, and they have never been immunized for them. And some of them are things that can be spread around, and they do it here in the United States, too. You know, and I think it's sad on both parts. I agree with Mr. Bianca on that part, but they do it.
Yeah, I agree with you too, Stephanie. You're absolutely right. You got parents don't get their children immunized. You know why? Because they say everybody else's child is immunized. So why should mine get immunized? But when you have kids, like in this case, that's coming from south of the border by the hundreds, probably thousands. Now your unimmunized child stands a chance of coming down with something very, very sickly.
Yeah, that type of thing makes me not want to go volunteer in a school. They have a school up here. The whole high school is infected with TB. And, you know, that's something that's airborne. A person just coughing, you're in the within so many feet of them, and you've been exposed. So, I don't want to see all these different diseases coming up. We got enough and too much. of that stuff, but people over here, we need to take care too, you know. But back to your subject, Marshall, I wouldn't want my child in a school where it has to be policed like that, because that means that just spells danger. You know, a lot of things happen, but it's up to the people. Once again, as Mr. Bianchi said, it's up to the people, the public, on how they're going to have their school ran. So they have to get involved and decide if they want to weed these type of students out or if they want to just bring police in. But thank you for having me on the show. Thank you, everyone. And everyone have a blessed evening.
But stay on for just a moment. We're going to wrap up. I just want to make a close comment. Yeah, I think what it comes down to is something that Mr. Piake often says, and it's up to the parents in the school choice, what kind of school or what school they want to put the children in. But I'm thinking like this. If my wife and I had school-age children or child, I don't believe personally that I'd want the child to be in a school where police presence was so heavy. I'm not saying the kids have guard in the school or whatever they call them now, these police, but the fact of it is that I would not want my child to see the school environment as a dangerous threat where you had to have police guards all over the place. So I would try to find the kind of school where the quality of the students was such that that would not be a requirement. I went to school for elementary and high school, and we never had any police on the campus of any schools I went to. I went to a parochial school for elementary school, and I went to several different high school prep schools, including a very selective prep school up in Minnesota. And even though the priests that ran the school acted like they were law enforcement officers sometimes, that's how strict they were. They didn't wear guns and badges. They wore priest clothes. And then I went to a military academy, and the students, which they range from age 14 all the way up to age 20, policed ourselves. If somebody got in a situation where they need to be disciplined, within limits, of course, we disciplined the miscreants. And it worked out just fine. It was all African-American school, by the way. But I don't believe that I would put my child, but bottom line, what I'm saying is, in a school where they had all these police. The other thing is, I do believe that it's good to have school counselors, nurses, and mental health professionals available in the school, because lots of things are happening in the children's lives today, and sometimes they don't want to talk to their family members about it. Or maybe they're ashamed, and maybe they feel if they talk to a stranger, they could be more open about what's bothering them. So I think that door should be open. And I certainly think that there should be a nurse in every school, so that if a child is evidenced in some type of especially what I would say, not emotional, but serious symptoms of some onset of some physical problem, that at least that child can be identified and that nurse can isolate that child and at least call that child's parents and tell the parent what symptoms they're observing, so the parent can get that child, take them to the doctor. Anyway, we've probably gone as far as we can with this subject, but I do want to say this about the immigration issue. This is addressed particularly to your comment, Mr. Piake. Now, I've been south of the border, not far, not real far south of the border. Been down to Mexico, been to South America, Venezuela. And those people down there have a very, very challenging environment in spite of what you said about some of the things you heard about and you've seen. Generally speaking, compared to America, those people have a challenging environment. And now with the political situation in countries like Venezuela and other places, you know, I sympathize with those people wanting to leave from over there. Sometimes, you know, going to the American embassy may not be the solution. I don't know if every one of those countries has a policy where they can process people in a rapid manner to get them some kind of refuge from the problems. But the main thing is, and this is my point, personally, I have an idealistic vision of the future of America. I don't have an idealistic vision of the history of America because I'm a history professor and one of the major areas that I try to educate my students in is the history of slavery and the cruel, horrific, and outrageous, inhumane treatment of people that were in America in slavery, that just because they were of African descent, they were treated worse than animals. And this is history. So I see America having to fix that attitude about other people that are not white people. Because President Trump, even, and I know you may take issue with this, Mr. Piake, but even as recently as after he got elected, became the leader of all the people, he led me to believe that he didn't want these dark-skinned people to come into the country. That this was, in my opinion, I could be wrong, you can tell me if I'm wrong when I finish, but in my opinion, he was basically saying the Nordics that looked like him and his family were welcome, but the so-called colored people of the world weren't welcome, especially if they come from poor countries. And I really don't like that policy. I think that America should welcome everybody, especially if they bring to the table some skills and a desire to work. Now, most of these people from the south of the border that I've met, they don't mind working. They will do your yard. They will build your house. They'll fix your car. They will do whatever needs to be done, and they'll do a good job. And I don't see a problem with us letting people in. And let me finalize my statement by saying about immunization. You know, I served in the United States military for 30 years. I served for 30 years, and I even belonged to the medical profession in the military part of that time. Went to medical school, not the regular, to get an MD, but to be a medical corpsman, or what they call a medic. And they can get the medical department of the armed forces down there, and within 3 weeks, I'm just throwing that out there, they could immunize every kid, everybody. They got enough medical professionals trained. They don't have to be MDs to give shots or to check people for diseases. They can do anything they want to do with the armed forces that they have available. Some of them just sitting around bases, not even doing too much.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Who's going to be liable for that?
Well, I think we are the big brother of the world. We've been policing the world for the last 2 years.
But that ain't the – who's going to be liable if some of those kids get sick from that?
Well, I'm saying we could, without letting them pass the gate.
Trump, he's the one that let them over here.
Wait, let me finish. We already got them locked up in cages, so while we got them in cages, all we got to do is send the medics down there to check them up.
And suppose one of them gets sick and die from that. Now you got a bunch of – why come the country they came from didn't do this?
Well, are they leaving the country they came from? Because the country
I don't know. I don't know why they're leaving the country they came from. They should have got their immunization. Some of these people are grown.
Yeah, but we got to understand something. We got some terrible dictatorial leaders down in South America that the United States is propping up.
No, the United States is not propping up nobody no more than anyone else is propping up. Regardless, that's still that country's responsibility. Mr. Washington,
well,
you got some bad leaders in your neighborhood. That's not American citizens.
Yeah.
Who's going to pay for all this stuff? You know how much each American, do you know how much each American citizen owe on the national debt? Me, this lady, they owe $87,000 apiece. Now you got the unfunded liabilities, which consist of Medicare, Social Security, pensions for military, so on, which is over $1 trillion. Every U.S. taxpayer owe $1,002,000 on that debt. And all I hear is people saying, well, let's do this with some more money. You got this one congressperson up in New York talking about $9 trillion on a project. Where in the hell do these people expect their folks going to get this money from?
Okay, well, let me just put in my 2 cents worth. I'm not going to make it a long, drawn-out statement, but listen.
I want to ask you something, too. You say you teach history.
Let me finish what I was going to say. I just want to say this real quick. Now, I have to be careful because I have been reprimanded here in my home about giving out too much personal information. So I'm not going to tell you how much money or how many income sources and all that. But I would say that I would not personally and do not have a problem with if the tax money that comes out of my pay of the various sources of income I have, if 20% of that tax money would go to help these poor people trying to find a better life. I mean, that's the way my heart is.
Well, I tell you what, let me tell you something. There are organizations out there that's collecting money all the time. Next week, report to me that you wrote a check to one of them. There's a whole bunch of them out there.
Yes, okay, that's a good question.
If people want to do that, let them do that. Why come the people in their country that's living very, very well, you can go on YouTube and see them having celebrations, having big days at the mall during Christmas time where the kids come in and sit on Santa Claus' lap. You got high schools down there that's having big parades and outings. You got kids in those countries at the water park sliding down and on the beach and having fun. You got folks on sidewalk cafe being served outside. Why come they don't do that? They're their people.
Well,
fellow countrymen,
I don't think they were leaving.
You should tell Trump that. He's the one that locked all those children up over here instead of sending them back to their.
The kids come to the border without by themselves, and with the adults that they're with are not their parents. So why is it me as a United States citizen supposed to have more concern about somebody else's child than they do?
That's why he needs to send them back. Why keep them over here? Who's paying for that?
Well, you're right.
I agree. But they don't even know where the hell they come from.
well, we could go on and on because this is going to go round and round in a circle.
We sure will because I want to ask you something about the history.
Yeah, go back to that.
You say you teach history.
I do,
you say
yes.
You be teaching people about slavery. Well,
yes,
what about before they came here? What did they do that was notorious? What did they do that was evil? What did they do that was criminal that ended them up over here?
Well, listen, now, that's a whole at least 20-minute lecture about the people that came over here in the slave ship. But we'll say that for another time. Let me just give you a quick answer. I'm not going to not give you an answer. I just want to let you know to get into it, take a little time. But the quick answer is this. The quick answer is this. Are you there? I hear some background noise. I can't talk to the background noise. So just a minute. Hold on. Let me see if I can do something about the background noise. Okay, just give me 1 second. I think I might be able to fix the background noise.
You know, that's my concern. So I hear, and I'm not jumping on you, but people always starting kids off in these classrooms talking about the mean things that happened to these Africans that was brought here, that ended up here in the country in the slave trade. All right. But nobody never talks about why they ended up over here.
Well, a lot of them were born in slavery, like my great grandfather, probably your great great grandparents too, was born in slavery. That's how they
in 1555. Of 1455, when you had the incidents that you had a bunch of black folks that's on the beach that just got off a ship. Why was they put on those ships? What landed them on those ships? What did they do? Nobody talks about that.
Let me try to put it in a simple kind of a parable. If just a little bit of a simplistic, but if I'm driving down the street and this has happened and I have rushed out of my house and I was going through my wallet to look for a credit card the night before and I left my wallet on the coffee table and I got in my car and I drove to work. And now the job that I have where I teach, I don't usually leave my office until around 9 o'clock in the evening. So I'm driving home and the police have one of their not frequent but regular roadblock checks. They checking for drugs, they checking for alcohol, they checking for suspended license, whatever. And so they stopped me and they asked for my license. Now, I have since the last time it happened, I made a copy of my license to keep it in my car, at least so they can check, make sure I have a license. But let's say, for example, I didn't have that. And their policy is anybody that doesn't have a valid license on them, they're going to put them in the bus and take them to the jail until somebody can bring their license down there. So now let's say I get, just cause of something like that, I get put in jail. Now once I get in the jail, they strip search me. They may sexually abuse me. They may put me in my drawers on a cold concrete floor. Somebody in the jail that have a mean streak in them may decide they want to take out their anger about something on me. So they come over there. I'm 75 years old. They kick me. Somebody may, if I act like I want to fight back, they may tie me up and beat me. Do I deserve all that just because I didn't have my license? So
let me answer that question.
Let me finish. Just because because these people, regardless of what happened while they got put on them slave ships, did they deserve to have all this terrible treatment after they got there?
You don't know what they done. I know what they done. And here's another point. I know what a lot of them done. But see, y'all don't teach that. Well, who snatched them up, Mr. Washington?
Yeah, I know. It's awesome.
No, wait a minute. You said that you mentioned they might have been in the wrong place. Who snatched them up? Then those sellers snatch them up.
A lot of those people got sold because they were captives in battles.
Because not necessarily. What about the ones that were raiding villages, kidnapping, burning, raping women, killing kids, destroying cattle and crops? What about them?
Those usually wasn't always the ones that got put in slavery. The ones.
No, that is not. That is not true. If you could not make your restitution, and I know y'all hate to hear me say this, but I'm going to say it. If you could not make your restitution, you had to do something. And rather than them kill you, they got rid of you because you was a bunch of riffraff. Not all the time, but a lot of the time that never gets told. And here's another thing, too. Here's another. Well,
I mean,
here's another thing. Here's another. It wasn't no 60 million people. Where did that stuff come from? Do the math. How many people would a boat hold? How long did it take for the transportation back and forth? Hey, they'd still be delivering.
Talking about approximately 350 to 400 years of not just 5 or 10, but dozens, maybe even more than dozens of boats going back over there bringing people back on a regular basis.
Well, here's the thing, Mr. Washington. In those societies, then, and it is still today, the sins of the father follows the child.
So you're
you?
He said my father, when he was 25 years old, if he went out there and shot somebody, I should hang for it.
The sins in those societies, this is what I'm telling you, it's that way today. The sin, as a matter of fact, it's like that here in the United States too. It's called civil trials. The sins of the father follows the child. So if you hurt somebody, let me finish. If you hurt somebody in whatever way you want to describe it, because when you sue somebody as a plaintiff, you have to show harm, you have to show hurt, you have to show toil. If you hurt somebody, you are expected to make it good. And if you, the individual, don't, then your family has to make it good. And that's what I'm saying today. Those that was brought here and hit those shores that committed those things back there, their ancestors, which are, guess who? Blacks today. The sins of the father follow the children.
They got whipped in slavery. They deserve it because something their fathers did a long time ago. Huh?
The sins of the father follows the child.
So you're saying that those people that got their backs and buttocks beat to shreds with horse whips, with lead stingers on the end, they should have got that because something their granddaddy did.
It wasn't, I said the ones that done it got peddled off. And I can give you a good example. I can give you a good example, and you tell me what you think about this. Hang on for a second. In one village, one area, there in the Volta region in West Africa, in Ghana, the Oye Shagme Fu, they had that problem where there was an argument. This is one case, an argument between the people over who was going to be the next leader. And one group started warring against the other, fighting. And the one group won and captured 400 of them. And guess what? They were going to kill them. But rather than kill them, they gave them way to the traders. They tried to get as much as they could in order to pay for the damages that they caused. They couldn't get all that they could. The next thing they could have done was killed them. So what they done, they got rid of them. And they ended up over here. Don't you think it's better that they ended up over here, those who are descended from them, rather than they getting killed? Then you would not be here today.
Well, let's do this. Let's continue this. I'm getting a little tired. Let's continue this next time. This will be our topic for next week. Should the black people of America continue to pray for the sins of our black forefathers from 1,000 years ago?
Well, hell, your Bible and Quran says that. I mean, you don't even have to wait till next week to say that. Any other time you follow that Quran, any other time you follow that daggone Bible, we don't have to wait till next week.
No, I'm just saying, let's go ahead and I'll encourage other people. I'll advertise it more, see if we can get some
and
more.
And, you know, here's another thing about that. If we tell them whites who didn't have nothing to do with claiming that their ancestors done something to those that hit the shores, then how can you not say that the ones that hit the shores don't owe the ones over in those countries that they done damage to? Anyway,
so
that's what you want to do. I'll see if I can be here.
Yeah, try to be here. I always like for you to be here. I would be very disappointed, especially if we're going to talk about this, if you don't be here to lead off. But that's a good conversation, and I'll tell you the reason why. My main reason for saying that is because, now this might sound controversial, but Booker T. Washington, my great-grandfather, might have agreed with you. He might have agreed that we had a better future situation in spite of all that bad stuff that they did to us over here than we would have had over there. He felt that because we came over here, Christianity had at least an ethos of trying to be kind to your neighbor, and that they did in many cases properly clothe us. They might not have gave us steak for dinner, but at least they gave us food to keep us alive. He felt that maybe that wasn't a bad thing that we ended up over here. Personally, myself, I'm really on the fence about it because I'm reading the story right now about the way they treated our people in slavery, and I know a lot of our people would rather have been dead than to have to go through that kind of lifestyle.
Well, Washington, you don't have black men kill 324,000 of each other in a 35-year period. Come on now. And the area is called, in this one instance that I gave you, it's called Yefa Ojamu. O-G-Y-A-M-U. And there's books on that. One lady wrote, one Ghanaian professor wrote books on those incidents. And it happens. I mean, it is true. I was in one spot one time on a road where a taxi tried to pass another car on the left, and things didn't work out. He lost control and hit a woman standing there on the corner, killed the woman. I think she was pregnant. I'm not sure. And he jumped out and ran off.
This was in
he
Africa,
has
right?
to. He had to make. He's got to make restitution to that family. If he don't, his family has got to.
Maybe his great-grandchildren will pay for it.
It might
like
be.
You're paying for your ancestors, so you say? Mr. Bianchi, sometimes you make me think you're a ball of confusion.
No, what I do is tell people things that they...
What goes around comes around is not just for black people. It's for all mankind.
Yeah, but I didn't say it wasn't. He said that he was telling people about slavery.
Damage coming to them from the
Have you ever heard of the Hatfields and McCoys? Have you ever heard of the Hatfields and McCoys?
Yes.
Are you asking me?
I asked Stephanie that. Those were real people. They probably still fighting today. All right.
Okay, well, look, let's go ahead and wrap this up for tonight. I don't want it to get too heated, but we will bring back up this topic next week. Mr. Jack, I appreciate that. I definitely want to hear your commentary. Steph, if you can make it, I know you may be busy, but if you can, take a minute out from your what you have to do is just at least for a few minutes if you love your conversation. And I'm going to see if I can get some more people involved and see what we come up with. Personally, I still, no matter what happened over there in Africa, I will never, never be able to justify the way that those people treated us during those 250 years plus of chattel slavery.
But here's the thing, Mr. Washington. You got two things that's against you. First of all, the federal government didn't cause that. That was people that was doing that. It was either going on in states or it was people. Less than 25% of whites during that time had anything to do with slavery. So to try to say that those here today that's in the other 75% in their lineage line, they ain't got nothing to do with that. Nobody can show what a federal government.
I'm not.
Let me say this. Nobody that I have seen yet show what a federal government of the United States. And you know the United States only been around since 1779.
But Mr.
Where
Jackson,
they profited.
When did they get into the conversation? I didn't know we were talking about them.
Who is that?
When did we start talking about the federal government?
Well, then you're talking about people then. Now, where is the people at? Where is the people at that beat these folks up? They committed. It wasn't a crime.
No, I mean, it wasn't a crime.
Huh?
It was a crime. It was a crime.
Good bamboozled and led astray.
Not no more.
Well, listen, hey, let's go ahead and let's call it a night for tonight.
I was just getting started.
No, hold off till next week. Just hold off till next week. We're going to give you all the time you need next week. All right?
I don't like to leave things off. I like to respond. I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I'm just saying that people only tell one side of the story, and that's totally wrong.
I tell you what, Ms. Frankie, I'm gonna tell you what I'm gonna do. Since you are like one of the mainstays of our show, I give you 5 minutes, and you can say anything you want to say. But then after that, I'm getting ready to close it out. Okay?
I'm going to say it right quick. I'll see
you
next week. Bye-bye.
All right, then. Okay, we'll see you. Tiffany, thank you so much for joining us. You want to make a last comment?
Thank you.
Don't say nothing personal about Ms. Bianca. Let's just deal with the topic. Did you want to address the topic? Stephanie, did you want to address the topic?
No. Thank you, though.
Okay, then. Thanks, everyone, who joined us tonight. It got a little controversial at the end. But we did have a good exchange of ideas, and we're going to pick up this subject next week. And that is, does anything that our forefathers in Africa did in their history, thousands and hundreds thousand maybe of years, does it justify the way that the slave maker and slave breaker society, does it justify what they did to the black people, the African people? That's what we're going to talk about next week. So thank everyone for coming on board. Thank you for listening. If you listen via the internet, and we'll join you. Hopefully you'll join us again on next week. Good night. Thank you very much. You have been listening to Booker T. Washington Speaks, African American Family Room Forum. And as always, we thank you for being part of our family. We thank you for joining us, whether you listen via the internet or you participated by coming on and letting us hear your opinions. And so we'll look forward, hopefully, to having your presence in our family room on next Saturday evening. So good night and enjoy the rest of the weekend. And don't forget to move your clock forward this coming morning, Sunday morning, in a few hours. Move it forward at 2 o'clock in the morning. You should have already moved your clock forward, but make sure by 2 o'clock in the morning you move it forward 1 hour as we go into this daylight saving time schedule.